geometry abstracted from scale. So a 3 geometry modulo its scale. If with geometry I mean something simple like a triangle, a triangle will have 2 shape degrees of freedom, so 2 internal angles, and for example an area which could be represent the scale degree of freedom of this triangle. So if I want to abstract from scale, I will consider equivalent all triangles that are the same internal angles but different areas. If I have a more refined notion, yeah, that this is a two-dimensional triangle in a Euclidean space, for example. But then if I have a more refined notion of geometry, like, for example, a Riemannian 3 geometry, which could be represented through a metric, my notion of shape is an equivalence class of under conformal transformations of 3 geometries. So I consider equivalent 2 metrics that are related by conformal transformation like that. So where this is a positive function everywhere. So a 3 geometry is really an equivalence class of metrics under diffeomorphisms. A conformal 3 geometry or shape, as I call it, is a further equivalence class under this kind of transformation. So I only consider the degrees of freedom in the metric that determines angles between vectors, not the ones that determine the length of vectors. So shape dynamics is a description of gravity as a theory of evolving shapes. So I try to describe gravity only with the angle determining part of the metric. And the interesting news is that I can do that. Which is non-trivial. Let me show you before this diagram. The reason why I can describe gravity in this way is this observation. This thing here is the phase space of general relativity in its Hamiltonian formulation due to Arnold Desmarais-Meissner. In this phase space, there are two first-class constraints, first-class constraint surfaces. One is the one that we know very well from Arnold Desmarais-Meissner, which is associated to refoliation invariance of GR. So you have a constraint surface that is first-class with the diffeomorphisms, and nothing. It's associated to this symmetry of general relativity. In addition, you have this other surface, which is associated to a different constraint, which generate this kind of transformations. And it turns out that it's first class with diffeomorphisms as well. So you have two independent first class systems. And they happen to gauge fix each other. They are completely second class with respect to each other. So they are good gauge fixings of each other. This is essentially the observation that is at the basis of shape dynamics. So we interpret this as two dual descriptions of general gravity, one which possesses this revolution invariance and the other which possesses a conformal kind of symmetry. So to give you an idea of what shape dynamics is, it's easier to start from this, the linking theory. It's a larger theory built on the phase space of general relativity, so three-dimensional metrics and their conjugate momenta, and enlarged with an additional degree of freedom, a scalar field with its conjugate momentum. But then the theory has the same amount of physical degrees of freedom as GR, so only 2 per point, because it has both the constraints of general relativity, one generating diffeomorphisms and one generating refoliation invariance. And in addition, it has a further constraint which generates conformal transformations of the metric, and at the same time, sorts of shifts of the scalar field that I added. Then there are two gauge fixings, different gauge fixings of the same theory. One is general relativity in the ADM formulation. I trivially put this additional scalar field to zero, and this is second class with respect to the conformal constraint. And so I'm left only with the two previous, the two constraints of general relativity, which involve diffeomorphisms and, refoliations. And so I'm left with the ADM formulation of GR. But then there is another FBH fixing, which is what we call shape dynamics. Instead of putting phi to zero, I put this conjugate momentum to zero. And this is now first class with respect to the conformal constraint, but it completely gauge fixes the refoliation constraint. And so I'm left with a theory which possesses three-dimensional conformal invariance and diffeomorphism invariance, but has no refoliation invariance. So shape dynamics, in fact, works. It has to be understood as a theory of three-dimensional geometries on a fixed foliation. This is a very well-known foliation, which is called CMC, so constant mean extrinsic curvature foliation. Yes?
So if you did this on some three manifolds, there must be an obstruction because some, some three manifold topologies don't admit solutions to Einstein's equation with constant mean curvature.
Yes.
So do you see that at this stage of the symmetry analysis? There's some global obstruction to what you're doing?
Yes, these two things won't be equivalent. In some cases, or at least locally, will be equivalent, but there will be situations in which this doesn't work. And also this, as I will show you, has some solutions which cannot really be understood as a space-time.
But
shape dynamics. Just I'm saying that there could be.
What you're showing this slide, you just say, okay, I trivially enlarge dr by adding phi, and now I can gauge fix it two ways.
Mm-hmm. Not well.
Is there an obstruction there already?
I don't think that there is any obstruction on defining the linking theory for an arbitrary topology. I don't quite see that. I know that there are four manifolds that cannot be foliated by CMC foliations. So there are actually solutions of Einstein's equations that cannot be globally foliated with CMC foliations, but they won't be solutions of shape dynamics. They're not equivalent. But if I take I'm not sure about whether if I take just a three, if I specify a three-dimensional topology, then that represents it. I don't see here how that would prevent me from doing this, actually. So, yeah, four-dimensional spacetimes that are not CMC foliables, of course, there are some of these. But I don't know whether the three-dimensional topology would give me an obstruction doing this. So anyway, these two theories then can be further gauge fixed, and there will be a common gauge in which they are equivalent. And it's, as I said, Arnovitz Desert-Meissner is in this CMC gauge. So the extrinsic curvature of the three manifold has a constant trace. The trace is the same everywhere. Thank you. Okay. So the thing I kind of skipped here is that these two constraints don't completely gauge fix each other. There is one single global degree of freedom for a compact manifold, one single linear combination of the scalar constraint of ADM that is not gauge fixed by the conformal constraint. So it's first class with respect to the conformal constraint, and it generates a vector flow that goes like that. And when you go on the intersection surface, this vector flow is parallel to the conformal surface. So this thing will have to be interpreted as an Hamiltonian, as something that generates a time evolution for shape dynamics, because it generates a flow which is compatible with a conformal symmetry. And here I have the, I've picture the flow on the intersection surface, but then it can be extended onto the conformal constraint surface everywhere. So this is what shape dynamics gives us, a history of conformal classes of three geometries. This is a solution of what a solution of shape dynamics is. Then, since I have this thing that the theory is equivalent to GR in a particular gauge, I would like to show you here how exactly you reconstruct a solution of GR from one of shape dynamics, because this illustrates the difference between the two theories, the situations in which they're not equivalent. This is essentially what is known as York's method, the conformal method for reducing Einstein's equations. So I have a conformal class of three geometries, and they are parameterized by this tau, which is a time for shape dynamics. It's the independent variable, in some sense. And we can represent this solution of shape dynamics with a gauge, for example. I can choose a unimodular gauge in which the metric has I choose only metrics with unit determinant. It's allowed by my theory because this is my gauge freedom. Then I define some momenta like that. This is the usual formula from Arnovit Desert-Meissner, which relates the metric velocities to the momenta. And it contains also this correction due to diffeomorphisms. And now, since the metric I chose is unimodular, this thing will be automatically traceless. Then I add a trace term, a pure trace term, by putting this G here, which is a spatial constant. So this is automatically a CMC momentum. Then, but it's not transverse yet, so I can impose the diffeomorphism constraint, which says that the divergence of the momentum is zero. And by solving it for this vector field xi, which is the shift, I can obtain a value for the shift and a momentum which is transverse. Then there are this pair of equations called Lichnerowicz-York equation and Lapps-Pixing equation. It's not a very original name, which allow me to deduce a scale factor and a Lapps from my conformal data. This should be tau, really, the York time, and the York time. These equations are essentially given by the by the Poisson bracket between these two mutually gauge fixing constraints. It's what the Poisson bracket imposes on the Lagrange multiplier of one or the other. Wow, of the other constraint. So and there are two elliptic differential equations which admit. In most situations, a unique solution. And then I can pack up everything into this thing, which is just an ADM prescription for the four-dimensional metric, given the shift, the Lapps, and this conformal factor using G Tweedle as my reference metric. Now, the thing is, the equations of motion of shape dynamics admit solutions in which the Lapps vanishes or the conformal factor goes to zero and these sort of things. In these situations, the equivalence with GR breaks down, essentially. Not always, one has to look case by case. But for example, here, this is what Enrique and also his student Gabriel Erzsjeg did, was to look at the asymptotically flat, spherically symmetric case. And the solution that he got is one in which the Lapps essentially vanishes on the Schwarzschild radius. So the exterior of the solution is just Schwarzschild's solution. But then on the horizon or whatever, on the Schwarzschild radius, something funny happens. And past that, I don't have a Schwarzschild interior. I just have another asymptotically flat region, a copy of the exterior region. So it decompactifies the interior. And here, really, on the Schwarzschild radius, what happens is that everywhere, this is a vacuum solution for GR, but not on the horizon, essentially. there the Einstein tensor is non-zero. So I would need a sort of an energy momentum tensor which is concentrated on the horizon. It's a delta function supported energy momentum tensor that will generate that in general relativity. So it's not a vacuum solution of GR. And then this can also be understood in a nice way as the end product of an evolution of collapsing matter. The simplest way to do it is to have a thin spherically symmetric shell of matter and make it collapse. At each time, you will have that the interior of the thin shell is flat, and the exterior is this solution, essentially. And as it collapses, passing the Schwarzschild radius, it will start to get larger and larger and decompactify. And basically, once you pass the Schwarzschild radius, you're inside an expanding universe, which is surrounded by this shell of matter. And nothing. We are studying the same thing as the spherically symmetric case for.
Sorry, you said expanding. It's flat, right?
Yes. Well.
The shell is expanding around.
The shell is expanding. Beyond the shell, there's a flat, compact region which is getting larger and larger. And before the shell, you're unwinding this solution as the thing goes down.
Is it the same? I mean, Israel looked at this thing, patching up Robertson-Walker space-time with a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Is it matching a flat space to the black hole?
Yes. Inside here, there's just a flat space.
We do have an Israel junction condition. Israel thin shell.
Yeah. Is that the end? Okay. Yeah, nothing. Well, I won't have much time to. I'm meaning to give you an overview of what other things we've been doing so far, but there's not much time. There's not time at all. But
interesting example you said. Mm-hmm. So inside the shell, the volume inside is flat and it's shrinking.
Yes.
And at the moment the shell crosses the horizon, the volume starts to expand.
Yes, because the conformal factor starts to grow, essentially. Yeah, and that is what happens.
And this is a smooth solution of shape dynamics.
Yes. There is the junction condition there. So, of course, there's a thin shell, you realize it with a delta distribution of matter.
It's not smooth.
And it's not smooth, yeah. So you have match.
Okay. But I guess the stress tensor is conserved for that thin shell.
Yes.
Even though, how can it reverse?
Yeah, you do it by taking the ADM mass at infinity as a constant, as being conserved in time. So, yes. But it's not smooth in the sense that spatially, once you cross the thin shell, you have a discontinuity, of course. Because
it seems like there's an infinite acceleration of the shell at this sort of bounce. Is that not the case?
I would have to really put physical matter on that to answer that. Right, so this is really a toy model. I wouldn't commit myself to saying something like that, but.
Isn't it that if you have two space-times which satisfy the Einstein equation, mm-hmm. and you glue them, then by construction, this is like construction, the thin shell is conserved, and then you have this matching condition. So this is the Israel work, right? You glue to space-time, and you don't continue to the metric, and you're going to have a conserved energy momentum tensor for the thin shell.
Well, not if the shell is a fluid or some specific thing that has a well-defined equation state.
No, but here it's not. It's just the shell comes from gluing to solution dimension.
Well, but yes. If you allow yourself to glue, invent equations of state that depend arbitrarily on local conditions, then you can do anything anywhere.
We don't allow yourself to do it.
Well, yeah. What I would like to do is to find my equation of state from a fundamental field, which one knows how to couple bosonic matter to shape dynamics, and that will tell you how to do
so
that.
So shape dynamics tells you what space time to glue, in some sense. Like
because in shape dynamics,
it does.
The solution is smooth in shape dynamics.
Yes. So
shape dynamics dictates the singularity and the corresponding solution of general relativity.
What has to happen is that the shape degrees of freedom are continuous and they don't go crazy. You don't have singularities in the shape degrees of freedom. But here there aren't many shape degrees of freedom. A thin shell has only one, essentially. It's not too physical.
It just seems
it's
like
a toy model.
Why you guys don't care more about anchoring this in something we understand? I mean, do the thing with some matter that makes sense.
Yes, I agree on that. It's just hard.
It's just
the first thing that has been.
People talk about the shape dynamics, and I never get a straight answer about, you know, what is the actual physical solution? So how about doing it a Bayesian type solution with null, you know,
no. And Tim was looking at Oppenheimer-Schneider collapse, but he's been doing that for a while. I don't know.
But Jason, you can defend yourself with Arnica's work. And with Arnica's work is not shell.
Which work?
The first work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. That is a completely vacuum solution, and this is interesting to me, just as. Yeah, well, I have to defend myself from the thing. This is what you obtain from the end evolution of the other thing, but still, this is a vacuum solution, and there's no. It's what's left over as. We suppose that that's what's left over when your matter goes away.
What is the first solution? It's not the Kruskal method.
No, it's the isotropic wormhole. It's, yeah.
But maybe we should let him know.
Yeah, well, there was no real punchline on this. I was just listing the things we've been doing, but that's good enough, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.